Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky. And Jamie, we can't hear you.
And Jamie's not here. Here,
Jamie disappeared on us?
Yeah, Jamie.
All right, well, okay. Well, this is, you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October 17th, 2011, episode number 251. And this is sponsored today by Omega Alpha. Good morning, Horse World.
Hey, girls, it's a Monday.
There's something wrong with us. Something very, very wrong with us.
Time to ride. Time to ride. It's time to ride.
But it's still Monday.
Time to ride. Time to ride. It's time to ride. Ooh, yeah.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's Monday morning, and welcome to Horses in the Morning. I hope we have Jamie back. Are you here, Jamie?
Well, I'm here on my cell phone. Apparently, my computer is trained to update at 6 o'clock on the dot when it needs to do an update. So perfect timing for me.
We had you to the minute I said, I am Glenda Geek. And then you were gone.
I don't know what happened. I was talking to myself.
Yes, you were, because we couldn't hear you. Well, you know, you're going to get all that figured out, I'm sure. But in the meantime, we can have you on the phone today, like I was last week. But, you know, you have some results to give us from your show over the weekend, because you and Jet moved up a level, and we're excited to hear what happened there. And we're going to get to that in just a minute. But first, let's find out from Jennifer what's on today's show.
On today's Omega Alpha Monday edition, it's Equines in Motion with the United States Pony Club Manuals of Horsemanship author, Susan Harris. Looks like Glenn and Jamie are going to learn how Susan Harris learned enough to qualify to rewrite the Handbook of the United States Pony Clubs, Volumes 1, 2, and 3. And if that wasn't a sufficient jump into the learn more about horses topic, looks like it's headlines, and more headlines, followed by adventures all over the United States by our co-hosts. And stay tuned.
All right, thank you, Jennifer. Today, my daily whinny. My daily whinny goes out to the United States Dressage team at the Pan Am Games in Mexico. They came out with a gold medal led by Stefan Peters. Stefan actually had a high score and broke the Pan Am Games record with his score of 80.132. So, and he was riding, Tino's Magic. And he was the only team actually to pair to score over 80%.
Wow.
So he actually won the gold individual as well. Heather Blitz, co-host on the Dressage Radio Show on a regular basis, came in second. She did very well and was very happy with her second place finish. But the team overall came in first, so they took gold as a team. And then the Canadians were second. And then Columbia surged to actually come in third there at the Pan Am Games. That was the first horse event to take place. So congratulations to the United States Dressage team at the Pan Am Games. And I think you're seeing there, what you see in that team is probably a little indication of what you're going to see in London for the Olympics next year. I have a second one. I just got my second one goes out to Kelly Babajon. I think that's how you say it. She posted on her Facebook page over the weekend, just got this link from my sister-in-law, and this is so cool. Well, welcome, Kelly. Tell all your friends listening every day. We're glad to have you here. And now it's Jamie's turn.
Hold on. I'm going to try to actually be able to tell the story from the microphone. All right. Hold on.
Can you hear me now?
Ah, there you go. You're good to go.
I cannot believe this computer updates at 6 o'clock Monday mornings and just shuts down. I mean, that is the worst thing ever.
You got to change that. You can change that setting. So.
Well, I will just send it to you to have you do it because I don't do things like that.
So, your daily Winnie.
My daily Winnie goes out to my pony. He was fantastic. Yay. My daily Winnie goes out to Fighter Jet, my horse, who went out and did his first novice horse trial, his third horse trial of all times, and was fantastic. Remember the first one he tried to buck me off 20 times, the second one he tried to buck me off a couple times, and in each one of the dressage tests, every time I would do a right lead canter transition, in the middle of the test, he would then try to buck me off. Remember that?
I remember that. I think the listeners do.
Yeah, and the right lead canter transitions, my score would be a 2 or a 3, something like that. Well, this weekend, he went out to do the dressage test and was just so relaxed. He wasn't stressed at all. It's like he decided that this whole thing was okay. Like, why? Because the warm-up would be me cantering him in a small circle for like 30 minutes because he was so crazy. This time, he walks right out of his stall, struts right out to the dressage rings, goes into the warm-up. He's perfect. So they asked me if I wanted to go early. Yeah, I'll go now because my horse is being good. Let's go ahead and go in the arena. We enter, and he does his dressage test perfect. Glenn, on the scorecard afterwards, I got an 8. I got an 8 with Jet, and guess what movement it was?
It was the canter transition?
Right lead canter transition, the one... The one he usually tries to buck me off at. So,
wow.
He was just amazing. And then, you know, the next
thing. What was your score after dressage? What was your score?
I'll recap. My first score, my first beginner novice, was a 48. Now, and it's opposite from dressage. The lower, the better.
Yes.
So then the second time was a 30.
If you get into the 20s, or if you get into the 30s, you're doing really well. If you get into the 20s, you have a really good score.
Yeah, that's like Stephen Peters getting an 80, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
So I started out with a 48, and the next time I got a 30, I'm a 37. This time, 31.5.
Wow, that's almost in the 20s.
I'm so close to the 20s.
That's actually kind of unbelievable with this particular horse, the way he had been going. What'd you do?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's an equivalent, a culmination of all of the herbal supplements he's getting to keep him calm. Or, my coach said, Barb just said, you know, he's just getting broke. He's just getting used to it. He's been a lot of places now. But there was a dramatic difference between last time and this time. So, I don't know. It's like he just had a change of heart. He's like, okay, this is not so bad. And he went up there and he did that. Exactly. I mean, I was the one idiot in the warm-up, and everybody was like, watch out for that girl, watch out for that girl. And my horse actually, like, during the bit check, didn't try to kill the lady checking his bit. That was huge.
Wow. This is amazing.
Yeah,
did they do it in order? So you did cross-country next?
Cross-country was next, and the course was... A lot of questions that he had never seen before. I mean, there was at one point you had to go through the water, up this little tunnel, and then off of a bank, 3 strides to another, to a coop. Then you had to gallop up the hill and to another pasture where there was like a big jump. You go big gallop down the hill, lots of galloping room in the second half of the course, and then you had to like make a right turn and jump up a bank, take 3 strides, jump off the bank, then make a left turn, and about 5 strides later, do another big, giant table. So So I was a bit concerned about that whole part of it.
You thought you were going to get wet?
Well, there was no, he just hasn't ever practiced jump up a bank or down a bank. So this is a little bit of a hole in our training, if you will. So my horse went out there, and the first couple jumps, we didn't have a very good rhythm, plus the fact that, my God, the horse jumps every jump about 3 feet over it on cross country. He does not want to touch one of them. He has no interest in touching it. Yes. So he's
hauling. You're the only one out there that doesn't have to use the schmutz on the leg?
Yeah, no, there's no grease on me. No grease on my horse. But I'll tell you, when we were walking the course, this is actually a couple weeks ago, if you remember, I went down there and schooled part of this cross-country course, the part that was open, and we did about 10 jumps. So at one point, my coach, Barb, says to me, Jamie, go jump that jump right there. And I looked at her and I said, Barb, that is really big. She's like, she's an advanced rider. She's like, whatever, no, it's not. It's tiny. Go jump it. I'm like, Barb, that jump is big. That's huge. And I might have thrown an F-bomb in there at some point. That is huge. She's like, just go. Are you going to do it or not? And, of course, when she puts it like that, of course I'm going to go do it. So I go around and I gallop around and I come to this giant bench and we jump it. And he clears it by, you know, a mile. And so we gallop up and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so big. She's like, it's a training fence, maybe. I think it's on the novice course. Well, I'm walking my cross-country course. It's on the freaking prelim course. This thing was 3'6" at least high and about 5 feet wide. It was a bench made for giants. I sat down on this thing and it was like I was literally telling me my feet were sticking straight out on the big chair. My head barely came up to the top of it. And I was like, what's up? I'm a prelim jumper. My horse jumps prelim fences. What's up? So it actually gave me confidence to jump every other jump out there because it was no problem. However, my horse was confident enough. He was actually, I thought I was going to get stopped for dangerous riding because my horse was a glorified runaway. I mean, he ran away with me. However, he ran towards the jumps he was supposed to jump, so that was the good news. And so we were tied for second place. I had to come in. The tie is broken by coming closest to the optimum time. So we tie. I'm in a tie. So I'm like, okay, I got to finish in exactly 6:09. That's how long this course was, 6 minutes and 9 seconds. I had to trot across the finish line. And it was a wrestling match to get him to trot. So I came in 19 seconds fast. But the person before me went even faster, so I actually ended up in second place by myself after cross country.
Wow, cool.
So, yes, nothing scared him. The up bank, the down bank, the ditch, the water, two water complexes, nothing. He was awesome. And then show jumping was Sunday morning, and he went out there and just kicked butt. My coach said, I come out of the arena after doing this course and going clear. She goes, you know what? You made every correct decision out there. However, your horse, I'm going to stop calling him an over jumper and just say that he's very, very careful.
He just doesn't want to touch his pussy.
She's like, my God, he cleared them all by like 2 feet. She did tell me, and this was really awesome to hear, she said, you know, and this is something I'll talk to you guys about later this week, but there's somebody who was interested in purchasing him that really seriously came to talk to me about purchasing Jet for their daughter and thinking he'd be a nice move-up horse for them because he was so calm on this time, you know.
They didn't see him at the last show, right?
No, and I told them what happened. And he was like, well, it's just getting better. And we're just interested. You know, we'd like to talk to you about it. And so I talked to my coach about it. And she's like, don't you dare sell that horse. If you sell that horse, I am going to be so upset with you. She goes, you're sitting on your intermediate horse. That horse could run intermediate, possibly advanced, if you don't sell him.
Well, yeah, he's clearing those jumps by 2 feet at this point. At this level, you're already jumping. You're already jumping intermediate to advanced.
So isn't that cool that he has the potential to do something like that? It's awesome. I don't want to
really,
do it, but
really, what's gonna, you know? Yeah, but you know what? You might want to, as you grow green on green with this horse. you're going to, you know, you may want to. You may want to ride this thing out. You'll be, and then we'll be going to visit you and seeing you at Rolex.
Oh, my God. That'd be, like, the coolest thing ever. But, yeah, that's what she said. She said you may get so bored, you know. She said do one or two more novices and then go do training level. And she said, and I said, I don't really care to ride prelim or intermediate, you know. And she said, listen, go do so many trainings that you're bored, and then you'll know whether you want to do prelim. She goes, if you sign up for a prelim and you're running to the porta potty every 5 minutes during that competition, maybe you shouldn't have signed up for prelim.
You know what, though? There are advanced riders, and I could name names, but I'm not going to, at Rolex, who run to the porta potty every 5 minutes. So that, I think, with some riders just comes with the territory.
Well, they're going to Rolex, so that makes a whole different story. But she did say, she goes, if your horse was like a couple years younger, he'd be in my barn. And I was like, well, I'd have to fight you. So at the end of this horse trial, I love my horse again. He was awesome. He was very sweet. He was, for him, affectionate, which meant like, he only tried to bite me when I was tightening the girth. So that's actually affectionate because he didn't try to bite me when I was brushing him or feeding him or grooming him or picking his feet or something. So for him, he was a total sweetheart. He was very good. And we finished in second place, baby. Woohoo! First novice.
Well, congratulations, Jamie. That's great.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you for providing me with an avenue to bore everybody about my weekend at horse trials, because we will do a jump-by-jump analysis after every ride. And so it's nice to just be able to spill it to you and just, wow. But thank you very much. I am dying to know, though, because all of us actually had big weekends. You went to a carriage auction, and Jen went to Buck Brannan. Hello.
That's right. Jennifer went over there. So, Jennifer, you went over and got to spend a little bit of time over there. I know you didn't get to go over every day, but you got to spend a couple hours there. What did you think?
It was very interesting. I went over on Friday.
Did you meet Buck? Did you meet him?
No, he was clinicking furiously out there in the middle of the arena on his amazingly wonderful big bay horse who can, like, it was cool because when he moves that horse around, the way he moves that horse makes Grand Prix dressage look sloppy. I'm sorry. He can just place one hoof at a time. It's just incredible. To the point that he can tell the horse to move left and shift the weight off of his foot, but not quite pick it up. It's pretty impressive. But I was really amazed. There must have been 10 or 15 riders in that session. I was out for the afternoon session. They had a morning session and an afternoon session each day. And it was the same group, so everybody rode either in the morning or the afternoon all weekend long. There was probably 200 people there to watch. The wind was approximately 35 miles an hour with 40-mile-an-hour gusts. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was a little interesting that way. It had an effect on a couple of the horses. There were a couple there that had the wind under their tails. Quite a variety of riders, too. There were obviously mostly Western riders. But there was a young lady there that was riding a gated horse. I think it was a saddlebred. And there were a couple of young ladies there in English tack. I know one of them was an off-the-track racehorse who was really doing quite well. And I'm a little bit familiar with the training techniques and the theories through past experiences. But I got there just at the right time that he was talking about turning the horses and teaching them to circle properly off the aids. And I tuned into that because Beaker and I don't school a whole lot, but our steering isn't quite what I'd like it to be. And Beaker, having been a Western horse and a probably ranch horse before I got him, just judging by what he does do, I had my aids all backwards when you're a ranch horse.
Oh, so you were doing it wrong.
I was doing
it
wrong.
What do you mean?
Go ahead.
What do you mean? Like, what do you mean backwards?
Well, when in dressage, if you want to make a circle to the left, your inside leg is active on the girth, asking the horse to bend into your outside hand. Well, when Beaker does a circle to the left, you put your left leg behind the girth and your outside leg on the girth, and like magic, you get a beautiful circle to the left.
So what you're saying is you went to see Buck and you came away and tried something and it worked?
it was amazing. I thought, well, that's just counterintuitive to me, having ridden from the European dressage tradition my whole life, going, well, that can't possibly work. What have I got to lose, right? I just went out there in the field, and dang God, it works!
Isn't it funny how our horses have to train us sometimes?
Yeah, and I also discovered that I can ride him completely without headgear.
Yeah, you've been starting to ride him with just the cavesson, right? Or what?
Well,
what have you
I've gone beyond the cavesson. I was so thrilled with the results. The next day, I hopped up on him and I put his riding cavesson on him, which is just a noseband. And I had the reins really loose. I don't like to fold his head too much. And I was riding him off of a neck strap. I just had the neck strap on him, and I was just using my legs and the neck strap. And I was doing circles and turns and cantering and jumping. It was fun.
Wow.
Which is wow, bridleless, huh?
Yeah, the bridle's still there because I'm a chicken. But I was amazed that I could had amazing steering, just really detailed, wonderful steering, because I finally understood the leg aids that he was trained with. And he doesn't direct rein, even though I ride English. If you try to turn left by pulling the left rein, he kind of gives me this look out of the corner of his eye like, you idiot, don't you know how to steer? Okay, outside rein across his neck. Okay, we steer. But I can take a neck strap around his neck and just do that. And he turns if I use my leg aids with it. It was pretty awesome. I just had a great day.
So you learned something from Buck. Awesome. Congratulations. Was he just like mythical and magical like I would imagine him to be when you stare at him?
No, he was not mythical and magical. But, boy, if you weren't paying attention, look out.
Oh, he gives you some crap, huh? Like what? Give us an example.
There was one person there. Apparently they had kind of an introductory thing earlier in the day that I wasn't there for because I was busy posting shows all day. But there was a person there that wasn't there for that part. They were late getting to the clinic. They were there for their session, but they weren't there at the hour they were supposed to be before their ride. And, he said, well, is there anybody? He would explain something, and he said, okay, is there anybody here that needs further explanation or doesn't understand this? And he had gone through how to do a specific type of softening or flexing exercise with your horse. And this person, I guess, raised her hand. I couldn't quite see because I was behind a crowd of people. And it was funny. He's like, shame on you, honey. Tomorrow you're going to be here on time, aren't you? I'm like, oops, sorry. he doesn't take any flack. If you know, he's not the kind of clinician that he's going to hold your hand and baby you. You step up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's good. I think that's probably why he's so popular. But he gets results, apparently.
Yeah.
So, Jennifer, what I want to know, when he left the round pen, did he actually float back to his truck and trailer?
Well, I don't know.
Walk
there
like
was
human?
An aura. I chalked it up to just the sand and the sunshine blowing through the sand because it was so windy. But there was an aura. There was. Yeah.
It's like Buck Brandeman's like Chuck Norris. Like the wind and sun and sand blows around him. It doesn't actually affect him.
Yes.
Like he can hear sign language, right?
And he was dashing and handsome aboard his big bay horse. And, everybody didn't quite bow, but, boy, it was close.
Okay, yeah. So when he took the saddle off his big bay horse, did wings come out of it, out of the horse?
I did not get to witness the untacking. They do that behind a curtain, no.
Yeah, exactly, because wings come out. And then he takes the bridle off, and the horn comes out of the forehead, because he's riding a magical Pegasus unicorn.
Now, did you think you met his wife? Did you look at a picture and see there?
No, I didn't. When I was there, I made sure to look up George Smock, who is the organizer of the clinic. Congratulations. Give yourself a pat in the back, George. What a fun guy. We'll have to have him on the show sometime, maybe on Scoop, but just, he's hilarious. I went over and said hi to him. He was getting ready to hop up on his horse and go do something with him. And there was a young lady there holding his horse, which I'm guessing was maybe George's wife, but I'm not sure because I didn't really get a chance to introduce everybody properly because we were on the fly with other things going on. So it was either George's wife, or maybe Buck's wife, because I know she's tall and thin and pretty too, so I'm not sure.
But she listened to the show. She listened to the show.
That's right. I was standing there chit-chatting, and I said, hi, I'm Jennifer. Is George around? I didn't know what George looked like because George doesn't have a Facebook page, George. And she's, "Oh, he's right here. Who are you?" kind of thing. And I said, "Oh, well, I'm Jennifer from the Horse Radio Network. I told him I'd stop by and say hi to him when I was here." And she said, "Oh, Horse Radio Network." And then she went on about you calling in from the show. "Oh, Glenn's on his way up to the auction up north, and he was calling in from the show." And I'm like, "Oh, wow, listener, cool."
Okay, this is a conversation you guys can have after the show, because you're talking about people we don't even know. Like, I'm not even following this story. So, yeah, this is personal between husband and wife. Jennifer, I just want to know, when Buck Brenneman went and got in his trailer, did it actually, like the truck, did it actually lift up and blast off, or did he just drive it down the road?
It actually has a caravan of black SUVs in front of it, a Humvee behind it, and a helicopter.
And there were, like, little gun holes sticking out of the truck because,
yep,
like, they have to protect him because he's, like, a magical, mythical alien creature. Well, that's so cool you got to go see him. Obviously, I would have freaked out and not been able to handle myself. So good for you for being able to control yourself.
I can make a circle with my horse. That's so exciting.
Well, that's awesome. Congrats there. And then, Glenn, how was the carriage auction? Did you buy a carriage? Did you buy me a dressage saddle and the dressage saddle sale you said was happening?
No, I did not buy you a dressage saddle because they pretty much were all crap.
Okay.
There wasn't much there. Although I could have got Jennifer a nice Western saddle. I didn't know she was converting here. So maybe there's a Western saddle in her future here. They had a couple very interesting saddles there that I haven't seen in a long time. And they had a number of the old military saddles, Jennifer, the ones with that you basically just see the wood.
McClellan's?
Yeah, they did. They had a number of those, and they actually sold for more than the other saddles there, and I think it was partly for the historical value of them.
Yeah, I don't think
They had a number. They must have had 10 of the old cavalry saddles. And are they cool looking or what? And they look like you would be walking around with a stick up your butt or riding around with a stick up your butt. I don't know. They don't look comfortable. But they must have been comfortable, or they wouldn't have sat in them for weeks on end like they did. I don't know. They didn't look comfortable to me. But did not buy a carriage. However, my co-host Wendy did. She ended up buying two carriages. One we managed to get shipped back with somebody else, and the other we had to go rent a U-Haul trailer to haul it back behind her car. So we did that on the way home. We hauled one back. I posted a picture of the one carriage that she bought, very pretty wooden carriage with spindle seats. A cut under, and it was very pretty, and she managed to get that. The prices of the carriages, Jamie, were about half of what you would normally see. The economy definitely has affected that. I know that the people selling were very disappointed. People buying were very happy because they were literally buying carriages for half of what they normally would be.
Wow.
The highest selling was one of those big coaches you see that you see the queen ride in, where the drivers sit up top and the little coachmen sit in the back, and then it's a completely enclosed, fancy area where the rest of the people sit. One of those sold for $40,000.
Holy cow, was it in the shape of a pumpkin with, like,
no,
ribbon hanging off
there? No, it wasn't in the shape of a pumpkin, but similar to that. It was very ornate, very pretty, and that sold for $40,000. That was the high of the day. My favorite was the hearse we talked about in Friday's show, which was ornate to the max. And I posted pictures on our page. If you scroll down, you'll see pictures of some of the carriages. The hearse was just unbelievably ornate and so cool. And that one, we had the guy on the show on Friday who sold that. And he also sold it in a bomber's wagon, which was the first time anybody there had seen in a bomber's wagon. And the last time we really want to see in a bomber's wagon, because he actually had the bomber's tools with it. So the same guy bought both of those. And get this, Jamie. What they do is they sell the carriages separate from the carriage lamps. And all these carriages have those fancy square carriage lamps with glass and all that stuff. Well, the carriage lamps are always sold separately because they're so expensive. So when he sold, and the carriage lamps on the hearse were just ornate, beautiful carriage lamps. I actually posted pictures of those, too. They sold the hearse for $19,500. They sold the lamps for $5,500 just for the lamps.
Oh, my gosh. That's, I can't even wrap my brain around what you're eating.
I know. No. Some of the most lamps, small, medium, large lamps, these little lamps you see on carriages, will sell for $500 to $1,000 to $2,000, $3,000 sometimes. So if you buy the carriage, they take the lamps off, and then they sell those after. You buy the carriage and that has matching lamps, you know you're going to have to buy the lamps. Because where are you going to find a set of lamps that are going to match that carriage? So you end up spending the money to buy the lamps. You just have to count on spending extra money to buy the lamps. So it was interesting to see some of these go that were that expensive. And then, of course,
so
the
what
chuck
you're
wagon.
Saying
yeah, go ahead.
Is you didn't buy anything, is what
no,
you're
I didn't
saying.
Buy. I pretty much didn't buy anything. The carrot, the chuck wagon that I liked so much, the three-quarter scale chuck wagon, we met the guy who built it. He's 79 years old, spent a year building this chuck wagon, doing the research. It had, he said, over 120 different pieces of stuff on the chuck wagon that they used to carry on chuck wagons. And it was a museum piece. It really was. It was absolutely beautiful. And he got $20,000 for his chuck wagon. So he wanted $25,000, but he took $20,000. And the reason he sold it, he wasn't going to sell it, but he knew the guy was buying it was going to put it in a museum. So he was very happy that his chuck wagon would be seen by whole bunches of people. We interviewed him for the driving radio show this week. And he was a neat guy. He was really a neat guy. You know, 79 years old, and he actually broke down in tears at one point during the interview. You know, you spend a year of your life, and really he spent 12 hours a day all year working on this thing. You kind of would, I think, feel a little lost once it goes, but he was also very happy it was heading off to a museum to be displayed. So that was the chuck wagon. I actually posted on the Driving Radio Show Facebook page. If you go over there, I posted a video of them selling of the actual auction going on for the chuck wagon. So you can watch it being auctioned off.
Well, the chuck wagon is really, really, really cute. But what I really want to know about is, was the cow actually driving carriages at the auction?
No, I don't know. Jennifer posted that.
I thought this whole time that was you, and I'm like, oh, my God, they're at the carriage auction, and a cow is driving around the carriages.
No, that was something Jennifer posted. We got a lot of comments, though.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Especially, I got to say, Ann Adams wrote, the guy's dropping his left shoulder, collapsing at the waist, and losing connection on the right, hence the lifting of the cow's head. And there's a paint horse in the background that says, you can see the disgusted look on the paint horse with this obvious faux pas. Hilarious. So, yeah, I thought maybe that was you. So where'd the Percheron picture come from?
Oh, it's just a Percheron picture I saw on Facebook and posted it because it was cool.
Oh, this whole time I thought you were seeing all these awesome horses at the show.
No, there were no horses there. We didn't see any horses. It was all just carriages. I will say, though, that there's all horse people, and I'm going to put this in a very broad category, have a certain look. Like the Percheron guys all tend to be these older guys with gray beards. So I'm perfect. In another 5-6 years, my beard's going to be completely gray, and I'm going to look older. I'm going to be a perfect old Percheron guy.
Glenn, you've definitely got the belly for it. So,
and they all wear these jackets. Actually, I'm going to have to gain weight. They wear these jackets, and they all have the huge, their farm name and the picture of the Percheron. All embroidered on the back, and they're the entire length of the back of the jacket. And they all have them. All of the old Percheron guys have them. So I'm going to need an old Percheron guy jacket, too. I'm ready.
Wow. That's something you aspire to. So that's
we had a
awesome.
Blast. Later on in the show, I'll tell you a little bit about the accommodation that Wendy provided for us for the couple of days. I have some stories to tell about that, and it's going to lead to our question of the day, and that'll be after our guest. Because you're going to relate to some of the things that I talk about after having been at shows in numerous places. And then I also want to ask you how you made out camping, because that never goes well for you. So I'll talk about that a little later, too.
I will let you know about that. But we want to thank Omega Alpha for being a sponsor on today's show. And we all care about what we feed our horses, probably more than what we feed ourselves. My horse was on a steady diet of equine chill and GastroFX this weekend to settle his stomach and settle his brain. And that's what their products do, is they kind of, you know, you can find an Omega Alpha product for any part of your horse that needs a little bit of help. So Omega Alpha cares about what goes into your horses and ponies, and that's why Omega Alpha uses only natural formulations for enhancing equine health and performance. All of their products are made by them using the finest natural ingredients available. Obviously, being herbal, they're not illegal, they're non-testable. Like, you're not pulling the wool over anybody's eyes. This is actually herbal and natural. So the other difference with Omega Alpha is their science that goes into their products. Dr. Chang is a well-respected pioneer in the industry, putting the natural ingredients together to make formulations that work for your horse. They also have a wide range of products to help your horse, and you can find all of them at omegaalpha.ca. That's omegaalpha.ca. And, of course, Dr. Chang welcomes any emails you have with questions about anything on their website. That's omegaalpha.ca.
Thank you, Janie. Appreciate that. And, of course, later on in the show also, we have our weekend roundup. There's lots and lots of news from the weekend, some exciting stuff going on in the horse world. And we're going to have that after our guest as well. We have a full week planned for you. Don't forget that this week we do have really bad ads. And the winner of Really Bad Ads this week will get a copy of Buck the Film. We'll send out a copy of Buck the Film to you, so you're going to want to get your Really Bad Ads in this week. Send them to Jennifer@HorseRadioNetwork.com and put Really Bad Ads in the subject line, and we'll do that Friday, as usual, at 10 o'clock. So it seems like we haven't done Really Bad Ads in a long time.
I know, it's been forever, and I'm sure that our listeners have compiled hundreds of really awesome ones, so we will do that soon. But I think our guest is on the line, Glenn.
Nope, not ready yet, it looks like.
Oh.
Looks like she's just getting her on the line now, so we have a minute.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about that.
Gotcha, my bad.
So tell us real quick, you survived camping. Camping never goes well for you. Things happen. It's cold. It's hot. The bathrooms are overflowing. You know, just nothing ever good happens to you while you're camping. You got through the weekend? You were just on a cloud nine and never slept? Or?
You know, what's funny is that camping actually, I mean, while completely unenjoyable to me, it was actually probably pretty good for me, because when it gets dark, it's dark, and I'm in a horse trailer. You're not allowed to have a campfire, and so I just went to sleep. So I went to sleep like 8:30 every night. So I definitely got caught up on some much needed sleep. I did freeze my butt off the first night because it got down to the 40s, and I was just had like a blanket, and of course I was wearing, you know, a fleece and some sweatpants, and I was all bundled up, and I had two dogs in the bed with me, and I was cold. So a neighbor lent me an extra blanket for a Saturday night, and it was actually decently comfortable. I'm not going to say that it's thoroughly enjoyable, or it's like having a hotel room or my very own bed, but sleeping in the gooseneck of my horse trailer, well, first of all, it makes me feel very poor, because everybody at the horse show has these fantastic trailers with these living quarters and heat and a little bathroom and a shower and all this. I did not shower, Glenn, Friday, Saturday, until Sunday night when I got home. There was no shower. I couldn't shower. Thank God Chad didn't go, because he would have been so disgusted by me. I mean, I took a shower last night, and you could like look at the shower floor and see the discolored water that was actually spreading itself around the floor. It was disgusting. So no shower for the entire weekend, but I think it made me ride better, because I think I stuck to the saddle better maybe. But other than that, it was, you know, it was decent. No major disastrous stories, aside from looking like the pauper amongst the groups of fantastic living quarter trailers. And then there's me with my old metal, broke down gooseneck, two-horse straight load with the mattress up in the gooseneck. So I look like a pauper. But I survived, and I got second place.
So you got second place, so that's all that matters. Well, our guest is ready. Her name is Susan Harris. Anybody that is in Pony Club will recognize the name Susan Harris because, you know, any Pony Clubber lives by the Pony Club manual, and her name is on the manual. So, you know, when I met Jennifer, you know, 25 years ago and started looking at the Pony Club manual, I saw that name, and now I'm so excited that we get to talk to her. She's also a renowned horsewoman, an artist, a riding instructor, and she does the riding clinics called Anatomy in Motion. And she does those demonstrations around the United States and Europe and really around the world. And those are the ones where she basically paints the anatomy of the horse on the horse and then explains through the actions of the horse their anatomy. And it's absolutely fascinating stuff. And we have Susan Harris here with us this morning. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
You know, I am so excited to speak to you. I really, you know, to be honest with you, Susan, I didn't think there really was a Susan Harris. I thought that the Pony Club just put that on there because they had to say somebody wrote it, you know, the manual.
Oh, I'm the alias.
Because who knows enough to write a Pony Club manual, and how do you get that gig? So tell us about that first. I want to get into anatomy of motion, but first I have to know, how do you get the gig to write the Pony Club manual?
I have to confess, I didn't think up all the stuff in the Pony Club manuals. That came from the Pony Club. They have many, many committees. They have a committee on lunging and a committee on nutrition and a committee on horse care and a committee on veterinary stuff with vets. And all the committees decide what's supposed to go in the manual. Then they send me all these notes. And I'm supposed to put it into a form where kids can read it, parents can read it. I send it back to the committees, and sometimes they have big fights about it. And then they send it back to me, and I make corrections, and finally it goes in. But I don't get to think up everything that goes in the manual, which is a good thing.
Well, Susan, you know who thinks up everything and is the head of every one of those committees is, I believe, I've heard the rumor that it is Jesus himself that is writing the manual.
Could well be.
Susan, but you get to take credit for it, and that's cool.
Well, I only get to take credit for writing the words and drawing the pictures, but not thinking up the information.
So you actually were the artist in the manuals, too?
That's right. If I do the hard stuff and write the words, I get to do the fun stuff and draw the pictures.
Oh, cool. That's pretty cool. So now you're doing something that I find absolutely fascinating. I know Jamie and Jennifer do, too. And that's the anatomy in motion. Can you tell people what those clinics are like and what they would see if they came to one? Because I just think this is fascinating stuff.
Well, I always have been an artist, a horse artist, and this is a really unusual canvas to paint on because I use a white or very, very light gray horse. And he's a live horse, and he's standing there and nuzzling me and eating hay. And I need to paint the bones on one side and the muscles on the other. And it takes, about two and a half hours to get a horse done really well. And people always ask what kind of paint to use. Washable kids' paints and kids' markers. And I really emphasize washable because if they don't say washable, they might not come out. And then the horse's owner may slay you.
Right. They end up with you'll be seeing the skeleton on the horse for the next 10 years.
You could be. And I learned that the hard way many, many years ago at a camp when we had an old white workhorse and we wanted to decorate him for a party. And I thought, I'm an artist. We'll use tempera paints. Those are water paints, right? And he was magnificent. He had a peace sign in his butt. And he was paisley and he had flowers and flower power. You can tell this was in the 70s. And then after the party, we gave him a bath and another. And seven baths later, he still had a peace sign on his butt, and the dealer was coming to take him back.
Oh, no.
And I had to hide.
Well, he was a peaceful pony.
He was. And I think the dealer probably ran those horses through an auction, and I always hoped that that old white workhorse might have gotten a really good home because he was the best decorated workhorse at that auction.
So now, what do you do? You paint the horse, you paint the gray horse, but then you actually do things with it and use that painting as a demonstration, right?
Well, the point of the demonstration is, I think people who ride and train and instructors, it helps if you know a little bit about how your horse works, not just for passing tests, but so that you know what's good training for his muscles and the way he moves and what's bad training. So I talk a lot about the circle of muscles and things like, for instance, when your horse flexes at the pole, it should happen between the first bone of his neck that we call the atlas and his skull. He shouldn't be, quote, flexing at the pole three or four vertebrae back, because that means he's overflexed and out of control. So if people see that and then they see it moving, we talk about the circle of muscles, meaning that, you know, the muscles that move the horse down the front of his hind leg, up over the back of his hindquarters, through his back and the top of his neck, and they finish up with the belly muscles. And if all of those work in harmony, your horse moves really well for that horse. But if you ride him in a way that his back muscles seize up, he's going to go hollow-backed and high-headed and have a really hard time and probably a sore back, and the rider won't have much fun either. So I'm trying to teach people about the things that make good riding and good training for the horse. And if you see it on the horse and you see it moving on the horse, it's a lot easier to understand.
I think what helps, too, is when I was looking through your website, is that you also have the riders wear a skeleton suit, sort of like a Halloween costume. And that really shows how the rider sits and, you know, the proper posture and all of that and leg position. It really is evidence. It really is a neat thing seeing it on the horse.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's the other half of Anatomy in Motion. That's Peggy Brown, and she is my business partner. She lives out in Toledo. And Peggy wears the black leotard with the bones painted on it, and it would make a really good Halloween costume. And when you see Peggy ride, as soon as you get over the Halloween effect, she doesn't have a skull face, though. Needs that, I think. But as soon as you see her ride, you can see your joints move. You can see when your hip joints are moving in sitting trot, and when your knee joints are moving properly, and your ankles, and when everything is nice and fluid. And Peggy also demonstrates the wrong stuff. What happens if you hollow your back, or you pinch with your knees, or you look down, or you do all those things that riding instructors yell about, and you can really see the effect. And the horse really helps her with that demo, because when Peggy does the wrong stuff, like she pinches with her knees or holds her breath, almost all demo horses get an indignant look on their face and stop dead. Like, I can't move if you ride me like that. And
right.
It makes a really good demo.
What is the audience most surprised at, or what do they learn what are they just shocked at that they didn't know by seeing this demonstration?
I think with both the demonstrations, it's like, well, I've read about this in books or I've heard about it in lectures, but now when I see it, I understand it, because I think a lot of people learn by seeing better than they do by reading or being told about something. And seeing the horse move, you can say, oh, wow, I can really see how those muscles work, or how when you look at the top of the horse's shoulder blade when it's painted on his skin, and you see how it moves, you go, oh, now I see why it's so important where we put the saddle. And I think the biggest thing people say is, I see, because it's a visual demonstration.
Right.
That's what I was going to ask you is, when you have these demonstrations and you see these horses painted like this, how much of it is going to make people go home and either have it fitted or change dramatically the saddle that they use?
Well, I don't get to follow them home and find out, but I really hope it makes a difference. And I've had a lot of people at demos come up and ask questions or point it out and say, I just never realized that. So if they realize it now, I hope they'll follow up on it and get their saddle fitted or put it in the right place or think about letting their horse use his back or his neck better. Because I think the most important thing is, once you see it, then you have that knowledge and you can act on it. You can do something about it.
Now, what do you think is the most important things that your audience takes home with them at the end of one of these clinics?
I hope it's that horses have their natural movement and that horses really need to be allowed to use all the good things they've got, their muscles and their bones and their natural movement, and that instead of us trying to tell the horse every move he must make, we need to work with his natural motion.
And what do you think is the number one way that we can help that?
Well, I think one of the best things, one of the best presents a rider can give your horse, and it's better than a big bag of carrots, is riding balance. And Pony Club does a real good job of teaching people about riding in balance, but there's a little zone of balance, and that zone changes when the horse moves or goes fast or whatever, but you can feel it when you're in it. And when you're in that little zone of balance, your body is free. Your joints act like springs. The movement goes through all of your body, and it really feels comfortable, and you feel like you're with that horse. But if you're a little out of that zone of balance, you have to grip with your knees to stay on, and you might grab the reins and hurt his mouth. And nobody means to do that, but it's a lot more uncomfortable. And the horse would really appreciate it if we could find that zone and stay in it the best we can, because it's so much easier on him.
Well, Jamie, do you feel like you were getting to that point a little bit better, more this weekend than you ever had with Jet?
Well, I would say that when you go to get in two-point position and get off your horse's back and try to stay balanced and hold yourself up off of his neck, it is way easier to do that when your horse is not bolting. So, yes, Glenn, I do feel like that was more balanced. Yeah, bolting and bucking, when they don't do that, it is definitely a happier place.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, the horse has got to do his part, too, and a few basic horse manners would be really nice.
Yeah. It's a long story, Susan. Don't even ask.
Hey, Susan, you wrote a book, didn't you? And I don't remember the name of it, but didn't you write a book on balance and movement?
I wrote a book called Horse Gates, Balance, and Movement. And it was before I started doing the painted horse. So it's, unfortunately, it's not in color and it doesn't have the painted horse, but it has a lot about how horses move and how riders and saddles and horseshoes and even conformation affect their movement.
Yeah, I think we have that book. That's why I kind of remember that.
We have it in the Pony Club bookstore.
Yes, and you wrote a whole bunch of books. I mean, you know, we've just talked about a few of them. Jennifer will put a link in our show notes page to all the books that you have done. And, you know, I'm excited. I think it would be fascinating. And obviously radio is a little tough to describe some of the things that you do in the Anatomy in Motion clinics, but what fascinating stuff. And you can see more about it at anatomyinmotion.com. And I'm so excited that we got to talk to the person, you know, the goddess of the Pony Club manual.
Well, thank you. And just so people know, we're in the process of revising them, so they will be out. It's probably going to take a couple of years to get all the way through, but we're chugging along with the committees, and we should have them out all shiny and new fairly soon.
Okay, you mentioned committees and you said revising, so my guess is, Susan, we can look for these Pony Club manuals about 2021.
If we all live that long.
Thank you, Susan. I appreciate you being on. The website is anatomyinmotion.com. You can find out more information and find the schedule and everything. There was anything else we needed to mention?
I don't think so. You've got it.
Okay, good. Thank you, Susan. Appreciate you being on.
Thank you
so much for having me.
All right, bye-bye. She probably knows more about horses than any of us from having done all the manuals and all the books she's done. She has to just know like a little bit about everything involving horses and care.
Do you think that when she sees a horse that's like, you know, you see a horse standing out in the field and it's like super pretty and I'm not really talking to you, Glenn. You see a horse standing out there, and you're like, oh, my God, that is, like, the prettiest horse I've ever seen. I just love it so much. She probably goes, well, you know what? C3 vertebrae looks a little bit off, and then look at the conformation on the hind end. Da, 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 da. Me, I'm just like, let's give it a cookie.
Well, she also remembered did the Pony Club manuals, so she's looking at it going, they haven't scrubbed behind its ears. They haven't cleaned its ears in forever, and that sheep is just disgusting. So
exactly.
All right. How do you keep track of your horse's information, like farrier visits and shots? Do you have a full box of receipts or post-it notes? I got to stop this commercial because I just have to say this. When Wendy, I was driving up with her, and I did the commercial and talked about Pocket Stable the other day. She said, I downloaded Pocket Stable because I heard it on your morning show. This is a co-host of the driving radio show. She said, I heard it on your morning show, and she said, I love it. She said, I keep track of all my horse's information on my Pocket Stable application, and she's also a veterinarian and a Chinese medicine doctor for animals. She has all of, she said, I just tell them to get out their iPhones when I'm there. I watch them download the application, and I have them plug in the information there about my visit date and all the information they need, and she basically makes her clients get this application. She loves it that much. Isn't that cool? And she heard about it first on our show. So you can find Pocket Stable in the App Store on your iPhone or visit them at pocketstable.com. It comes highly recommended by Dr. Wendy Ying and the rest of us here at Horses in the Morning. So download it today. Well, we're going to be back with a whole bunch of news from the horse world after our song today. It's called Heart in Your Hand. And we're going to be back after the song with the news.
Riding my horse one day, I had a flash and I heard him say, it's more than leather that you hold. When you take the reins, you know. It isn't some kind of magic between animal and man, more than a word or a whisper, it's a desire to understand. And you can do it too if you put your heart in your hand. Walking my dog one day, in a busy mind I was miles away. Those eyes were looking straight at me, waiting for some love to run through that leash. It isn't some kind of magic between animal and man.
That is Marianne Kennedy, Heart in Your Hands. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you today by Omega Alpha. And Glenn, I heard that the Stable Scoop episode for this week is going to be pretty good.
Yeah, it was. It's out now. It's episode number 165, titled Certified Whinnies. And it was we got caught up with the latest from the Certified Horsemanship Association with Christy over there and Tara Gamble. And it was fun to get caught up with them. I really like the Certified Horsemanship Association. Their national meeting's coming up here, and Jennifer and I are going to go over and meet with everybody. Julie Goodnight will be here, as well as some others that we know will be in town for that. So we're looking forward to that. Plus, our Tack and Habit pick was something called Whinny Warmers. You remember you and I did the Whinny Warmers with the socks for horses?
Uh-huh. Yeah, when we were at about time.
Yep, it's getting to be that time for Whinny Warmers. So we played that interview that you and I did at the last Ada show. So that's episode 165 of the Stable Scoop Show. You can find it at horseradionetwork.com. And now it's time for the weekend roundup.
It's time for the weekend roundup.
Well, you talked me into it.
Well, Jamie, did you see that we have crowned a winner of the HSBC FEI Classic Series in Eventing for 2011? And that winner was Mary King. She claimed the $150,000 prize, the biggest single award in Eventing, and she is now the HSBC FEI Classics champion for 2011. And she did that at Poe, which is the last four-star event that they have for the year, and that's held in France. Actually, the winner of the event was William Fox Pitt, who took first and third at the event, but Mary King was right in there, and she had, with the accumulation, they add up all the four stars, and with the accumulation of what she had won throughout the year, she maintained the trophy and went home a little bit wealthier. She can probably afford to buy dinner for everybody with their $150,000. Isn't it sad, though, when you think about it, that the big prize in Eventing is $150,000 and the big prize in some of the other Western sports is like 10 times that? So.
Well, they'll have a $150,000 class. These people have to run four stars all over the world for an entire year. I was confused on how, like, William Fox Pitt coming in first and third. I mean, you think about it. How many people can ride a horse? Not many. And then how many people can ride an event horse at a four-star level repeatedly over and over again and win over and over and over again? William Fox Pitt and Mary King are amazing, amazing riders. Mathematically, I don't know how he didn't win it, and she did, but what it said about her, she has been no lower than eighth place at all five of the four-star FEI events this year, which is amazing. She's also the first woman to win the title. So Mary King, woo-hoo!
Good job, Mary King.
And, of course, William Fox Pitt did win $50,000, being second, and he also won $75,000 for winning Poe. So he didn't do too shabby either.
No, and, you know, it must have been close because Williams won a few things this year too, so it must have been close. I didn't see the final point score, but it had to be really close. So congratulations on that.
All right, well, you know the horse Totalus.
Yep.
Edward Gow's horse.
Yeah, that little dressage horse that did some things.
Yeah, just a little dressage horse that you see every once in a while. And he's a decently good-looking horse. Oh, my God, he's like the most gorgeous horse in the entire world, and he's so super talented. And there was all the drama with, you know, Edward not getting the ride anymore. And so they auctioned off a photograph. It's a photographic canvas donated by Edward Gow of him riding Totalus. And they auctioned it off. $3,500 for a signed photograph of Edward Gow on Totalus. $3,500.
Wow.
And they're describing the item as a beautiful and valuable investment. An investment, a signed picture.
Wow. That's pretty good for a dressage horse, huh?
And that's pretty good for, you know, the para-equestrian organization that's going to get that $3,500. So good for Edwards for doing that and signing it, not auctioning it off, and for the people involved in that. So, anyway, there you go.
Well, you know those 22 horses that died in Australia we talked about last week, and they weren't quite sure why, and they thought maybe somebody was poisoning them, and they just, you know, weren't sure what the issue was. Well, now they come out.
It seems
like every day there's a new story, doesn't it, about them?
They've said that, you know, maybe there was somebody that was seen parked outside there at night, and it was all getting all dramatic, and maybe there's somebody who's sneaking in and poisoning these poor, poor animals. So what are they saying now?
Well, now it's changed again, and they were quarter horses, if you remember right, used for sprint racing. The owners of 22 horses that died while believe that it was ticks that killed their animals. Now, ticks carry diseases that kill animals. So there's something missing in this story, and I reread it several times. And they know it's not the Hendra virus that was down there causing all the trouble in Australia. And it's not botulism, and it's not poisoning. They have ruled out all of that. So they think it's these ticks. And they say our horses have no resistance to ticks because they have never been exposed before. Well, a tick bite does not kill a horse. A tick carries something that kills a horse. But they didn't follow up with the rest of the story and say what the something might have been. You know, the only way a tick's going to kill your horse is if you have a million ticks all over your horse and they're doing it, you know, sucking all the blood out. But I don't get it. As far as I know, a tick just doesn't kill your horse unless it carries something.
Well, and ticks are carriers of Lyme's disease and things like that. So, but why didn't they say that it's Lyme's disease killing the horses instead of the ticks? So, yeah, that's kind of bizarre. So, I mean, unless these are like some sort of like killer bees from, you know, Mexico, these are like killer ticks from Australia, and you get a bite by this tick and you're dead. You're dead.
I don't know. Anyway, that's the latest on that. We'll keep you informed because tomorrow it'll be something else killing them, and we'll let you know.
I hope not. I mean, I hope they get it figured out and sorted out. But my gosh, it is definitely. Our hearts go out to the people that are involved in this because it's just got to be so frustrating to have no idea what has killed 22 horses. Just horrible. On a lighter note, October 15th. Did you guys go? Well, I know you didn't, Glenn. Saturday, Jennifer, did you go to Keeneland? Have you been to Keeneland this entire opening meet?
I haven't been to Keeneland at all yet this meet.
We're going to try and get there this week. We're hoping to go this week.
You got to go this week before it closes because this is a big 75th birthday. And they actually, on October 15th, celebrated the 75th birthday. And I just thought it was interesting to read a little bit about the history, and this comes from, I think, Kentucky.com or Keeneland.com. October 15th, 1936, which fell on a Friday, the Thoroughbred Racing returned to Lexington, Kentucky, and it was a forward-thinking group of area residents that had built this model racetrack, and they decided to hold some races. And so the first one, October 15th, 1936, they held a 7-race card. The purse totals, a whopping, for 7 races, $7,380. Woo! So the first race, just on today in history, the first race was a $1,000 allowance race. Allowance races now are like at least 30, you know. But the $1,000 allowance race, 2-year-old fillies going 6 furlongs, and the first horse to win a race at Keeneland, Royal Raymond, a daughter of Royal Minstrel, who won the race by 4 lengths, trained by J.W. Healy, ridden by J. Gilbert, and was owned by John Hay Whitney. So there you go, on this day in history. And the 5th race on opening day showcased a horse that was a future Hall of Famer, Myrtlewood. That is a 1936 name if I've ever heard one, Myrtle. They called her Myrtle, and she would win twice more at Keeneland during the 9-day race meet. So this mare, Myrtlewood, ran 3 times in 9 days. You would never see that ever in today's racing. They would never race a horse that close together. 8,000 people went to Keeneland on opening day. Opening day this year, what'd they say, there was 20,000?
Yeah, it was a whole lot. I mean, that place gets so packed you can barely walk or see a horse.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, very, very cool, very fun. Happy birthday, 75 years to Keeneland. If you keep anything open 75 years in the United States, you're doing good.
Yeah, and we're hoping to get there this week. We're one afternoon this week. We're hoping to ride over there, and we're also planning on going over on Saturday or Sunday morning for breakfast at Keeneland and watch the horses exercise as the sun comes up. It's always a really neat thing to do, and chilly a lot of times as it's getting colder here in Lexington. One of my favorite racehorses, See You at Peelers. If you remember right, See You at Peelers had won 22 races, and then the 23rd race came in like 6th or 7th, and they weren't sure what was going on with that. And of course, I think he's a pacer, right? I always get that mixed up.
He's a pacer.
Yep. So they weren't sure what was going on. They thought there might be a health problem, and they think there might be problems with his heart. So they've been monitoring that and doing all that. Well, he ran in a qualifier on Friday, winning the qualifier in 154 at Freehold Raceway. And Jimmy Tacker, who we've had on this show as trainer, said he's optimistic that the three-year-old filly could race again soon. So there's hope. They actually had a heart monitor on the horse during the race, and they were going to take a look at the results of that. And then they're going to decide what's going on, you know, see if they can figure out what's going on and whether the horse will race again. But I got to give Tactor credit because he's being very careful and very thoughtful about, you know, not pushing this horse too hard or causing the horse any damage. So good job, Jimmy, for that.
I think the guy's a class act, and I'm glad that he's taking it a little bit easier. You know, the horse loses. You know, your horse is good if it loses a race and everybody freaks out about his health problems. So good luck to See You at Peelers. Now, another horse that made a big, giant comeback, Glenn, has made a comeback in a big way. We talked about Uncle Mo winning his last race. Now, Uncle Mo and his stablemate, Stay Thirsty, both owned by Micropoli, and of course he is the vitamin water creator, so he's doing pretty well for himself financially. If you were to go to breakfast at Belmont, if they have that, you would see Uncle Mo and Stay Thirsty on October 16th working together in the bullet work, which means it's the fastest of the day at that distance. They worked 5 furlongs in 58 seconds, and Stay Thirsty worked a half mile in 48 seconds. This is crazy fast. I don't know why he's running these horses so fast right now, but maybe it's in preparation November 5th. Both of these horses are going to be aimed for the Breeders' Cup Classic. So stable against stable, owner versus himself, neighbor against neighbor. Who do you pull for, Uncle Mo or Stay Thirsty? Obviously, you know, my favorite is Uncle Mo because we're Facebook friends and it's like I know him. But not too long ago, Uncle Mo asked his Facebook friends whether they thought he should run in the Breeders' Cup Classic or the Mile, because he won the Juvenile last year. Then he got sick and he didn't get to run in the Derby. He was a Derby favorite from like October through May, and then he scratched a couple of days in advance. So he asked his followers, should he run in the Classic, which is against the big boys, many multiple ages, you know, every Classic best runner will be there, or the Mile, which is more of his distance. But not as prestigious as the Classic, but prestigious nonetheless. And I posted on his Facebook page that I thought he should do the Mile this year and the Classic next year, and then he could be like the Triple Crown winner of the Breeders' Cup, having won the Juvenile, the Mile, and then the Classic. I was outvoted. Everybody else said he should run in the Classic. And so now Uncle Mo posted this yesterday afternoon. If you're not friends with Uncle Mo, you should be, because you will be very entertained, because he talks like he's 12 years old. Hi, friends. I had the bullet work again today. Fastest time of the day! Exclamation points across the board. I went 58.2 for 5 furlongs. I feel great. Uncle Mike, Uncle Todd, and Uncle Johnny kept telling me to slow down and that I'm going way too fast. I told them that I'm jogging and I'm not even going close to my fastest. I am so focused. I have a classic to win and I have to make up for lost time. So in Uncle Mo's words, he is aiming at the classic.
There you go. There you go.
So
Uncle Mo.
Love it.
I know you're going to be rooting for him. I'll have to pick somebody else so we have a challenge. We can have a wager.
Oh, you take Stay Thirsty and I'll kick your butt. It's fine if you don't let me. Go ahead.
Okay. Hey, you know who's been having a little bit of trouble when she goes on vacation?
Who?
The Queen of England. She's having some trouble when she goes on vacation. Yeah, and you know what it is apparently she goes to Deeside, which is apparently out in the country. It's one of her many homes out in the country. Well, she brings her staff along she brings all these city people from London out to the country, and there's nothing to do. So she's had this problem in the last couple of years when she brings them out. Guess what this staff does? These unruly bunch of city people decide to drink too much. So boredom sets in, and they drink heavily, and apparently she has a bunch of drunk staff when she's out in the country. So this year, she decided that she's going to solve this problem, and she is providing activities for them this year so they don't get so drunk.
What? Are you serious?
I'm not making this up. The Queen will offer horseback riding, kayaking, mountain biking, along with weekly bingo games for the royal staff. She even has arranged... She's being so generous. She even has arranged for TVs in their bedrooms. They didn't even have freaking TVs in their bedrooms. No wonder they were getting bored. What else do you have to do when you're off? They're out in the middle of the country in this castle with nothing going on. What would you do? I think it's about time she provided them with
You treat it like a dorm. You get drunk and you run up and down the hallways in your underwear, and then that's what you do.
That's right. That's exactly what they were doing, apparently. So... Now she's going to try and give them some activities and some things to do so they don't get so unruly while on vacation. And that's what's going on the Queen's side of the...
I feel sorry for her. Poor thing. She just has so much to deal with. But you know what's funny is, like, she deals with the entire country, you know, and, like, weighs in on everything. And then she has to worry about her drunk staff. So that's actually rather entertaining to me that the Queen has this problem.
I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Finally, I've got one last story for you, Glenn, and this is actually really, really cool. And it's for everybody that I know that rides an off-the-track thoroughbred. The Jockey Club has launched a new program. It's called the Thoroughbred Incentive Program, and they are going to be sponsoring thoroughbred classes and high point awards at local, national, and internationally sponsored horse shows. They've committed $100,000 to the Thoroughbred Incentive Program. It's a pilot program that starts in 2012. It's going to have a couple annual awards. It's going to touch like all aspects of the entire thoroughbred riding world. They're going to give awards to young riders, Thoroughbred of the Year, all that are people that have taken an X-race horse, retrained it, and given it a new job. And I think, obviously, they're trying to promote the fact that you can adopt a thoroughbred and do some fantastic things with it. So you can do, there's essay contests, there's young riders, there's 4-H, pony club, other activities, anything you can imagine. There's going to be 100 jumpers show, classes sponsored, eventing, anything that uses a thoroughbred. I think this is a great step for the Jockey Club. What a great idea.
Yeah, I think it's a terrific idea. And, you know, this has been one of the goals for the Jockey Club for years, was to get horses like yours, like Jet, out there doing other things and not ending up in a meat truck to Canada. And I think that by actively getting involved, that'll change that. And good for them.
Yeah, and the website for that is kind of bizarre. TJCTIP. I think it stands for the Jockey Club TIP, Thoroughbred Incentive Program. So TJCTIP, it's a little too much to spell out, so they use the initials. But you can check out things and you can download applications for horse shows. So definitely check that out if you own a Thoroughbred. I'm going to click on it right now.
Mm-hmm. You know what else is happening, too, and you probably saw this at the show this weekend on that note, is that everything goes in cycles. And for years, you know, 30 years ago, every eventer rode a Thoroughbred. And then, it, you know, warm blood started coming into play, and then the warm bloods have been really big. Well, it's been in the last couple of years that you've seen more and more eventers going back to riding Thoroughbred. And I don't know if you saw that at the show this weekend, but that is becoming a more common thing again.
Yeah.
Is a lot of them going back to Thoroughbred.
They're back. It's awesome.
Yep. Yep. And speaking of Thoroughbreds, I have one more story for you, too. You know how we talked about, and I think we got Frankie on the phone for this, we talked about in England how they started having a whipping rule during races, that they were only allowed to strike the horse so many times, and then there were these special padded whips and everything. Remember we talked about that?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it started. The rule went into effect, and apparently the jockeys are having a little bit of a difficult time. And we talked about, and I think we talked to Frankie about this, we talked about the fact that when it started, it was going to be a problem for a couple of weeks for the jockeys, because it's very difficult to change what you've done for 20, 30 years with some of them. You've just done it in a dozen races a week, and you're just doing it over and over again, and now you got to think about something different, and habit just kicks in. Well, there were a couple jockeys. Richard Hughes relinquished his license on Thursday after a second whip ban in the space of 4 days and said he would not ride again until the regulations were reviewed. On Saturday, Belgian jockey was given a 5-day ban and stripped of £50,000 in prize money after he used the whips once too often when winning the Britain's richest race. And what the jockeys are saying is, because remember after the quarter pole, the last quarter mile, they only allowed to strike him like 5 times. Well, what happens is the jockeys are saying, now, in addition to riding the horse, looking for our line, trying to figure out in the end of the race at the quarter pole where we're going to line up, how we're going to get through the crowd, we have to watch for the quarter pole and start counting every time we strike the horse after. So in addition to trying to stay alive and win the race, they have this extra thing to think about, and it's very difficult to do. So this jockey here, stripped of £50,000, that's like $1 million. No, I think it's probably $70,000. But it's like $70,000 because he did it once too many. He probably lost count. It is tough. I mean, I agree with the ban, and what some other jockeys are saying is it's just going to take time for us all to get used to it. But in the meantime, there are some severe penalties, and they are handing out the penalties. They're being stripped about it. So we'll see what happens. The jockeys are going to have a meeting with the committee here shortly to discuss all of these things.
And I think that this could be solved by just making it a little simpler. I mean, again, I ride with a whip and spurs or whatever I need to make sure that I'm safe. And I certainly understand the need for it. But their crops and their whips that they use are extremely harsh. I mean, very, very tough. So you could think of two things. Either ban them all together, if that's what you guys want, because you can't keep track of how many times you hit your horse with your giant wooden mallet, or you change the whips altogether. And they become
They have done that. That's part of this, is they are using padded whips now. So they have changed
the
whips.
Well, one or the other. You know, either ban it or use, or just make that. Because counting is ridiculous. That is extremely hard. And I know we talked to Frankie about it. But to look for the quarter pole and to count how many times, this whole thing could be solved if you guys either didn't have whips, which I know none of you want, or you have a softer one. So I guess I feel pretty strongly about that.
Because they are
giant mallets.
And there was an example given, you know, in a 5-furlong race, they're traveling 20 yards a second. And they say, imagine in a race like one of their big races over there, the Stewards' Cup, where there might be 25 horses around you, and you're looking for the furlong pole in addition to trying to win the race. And then counting your whips. I don't know what the answer is. I know that they're going to be looking at it and trying to work it out. I know the guy that lost $50,000 because he miscounted and did one too many. It's probably pretty pissed right now.
Yeah, I would say so. And just finally, to finish up the whole weekend, congratulations to Boyd Martin, because he won Fairhill this weekend. And he did it on – we really need to book him to talk about this horse that he rode, because he retired him and then just brought him back out of retirement. His owner – handed him back to him after the fire and said, bring this horse back. Now you have someone to ride. And he went and won a fair hill with this horse. And he says that it was no coincidence. And no coincidence that the top three finishers, all X-race horses. How awesome is that? Fair
there
hill.
You go. There
awesome.
You go.
Congratulations, Boyd Martin.
Was that the Ying Yang horse?
Ying Yang Yo, or Thomas, yeah. as they call him.
Well, congratulations to Boyd. He had a good year. I mean, he had a good year riding, not such a good year off the horse. I mean, a lot of things happened with the fire and his wife's father dying. It just, he had a whole lot of personal stuff. But yes, what a true professional to be able to put that personal stuff aside and still ride as well as he did this year. He deserves an extra round of applause for that. So
yeah.
This is for Boyd. That's tough to do. Very tough to do.
Dude, he's amazing. He's amazing. Yep. So well, we need to get him on to talk about Ying Yang Yo and tell us about this horse. Because apparently there's a really interesting story that goes along with it. So, well, congrats to him and all the people. And apparently at Fair Hill or some event this weekend, they did Shetland Pony Races. So we need it's on his blog, which is where I saw it. But you have to go check out the pictures of the Shetland Pony Races. Apparently it was amateur riders and it was a relay race between amateur riders and professional riders. So I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. I just saw that he had the pictures on his website.
Okay. Well, tomorrow I need to tell you a little. We need to talk. We don't have time yet today. But we need to talk a little bit about our trip over the weekend here and the hotel situation. And we're going to, and I'm sure, and this will lead to the question of the day tomorrow, because we've all been at horse shows that are sort of out in the country, and we've had to stay at some interesting hotels. So we'll talk about that tomorrow, and I'm sure you have a story or two, too. So tomorrow, it's all about horse show hotels. All right, that's it for today. We'll be back again tomorrow, as I said, 9 a.m. Eastern. And you can find all the show notes for today at horsesinthemorning.com. Don't forget that you can listen to our shows on iTunes. Just go to iTunes and search for Horses in the Morning. Hit subscribe, and it'll be automatically downloaded to your iPhone. Are you getting a new iPhone, by the way? The 4S?
Why would I get a new iPhone? Maybe
don't you
for
have
my
the old
birthday.
One? Don't you have
yes,
the old one?
Yes, I've got old? Like, it's like ancient. They look at me and they laugh.
Well, time to upgrade. Time to upgrade there, girl.
I know.
Speaking of which, it's coming up this week, isn't it?
I don't want to talk about it. I'm just getting older at this point.
All right, we'll be back again tomorrow. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Have a great day.
Absolutely. The winner was Will Faudry, by the way, on Shetland Ponies. I'll post a picture because he just barely edged out Clark Montgomery. And to see these guys in their Olympic red coats riding Shetland Ponies at a dead gallop is awesome. I'll post that in a minute. Everybody, please spay, neuter, and geld.
And we'll see you at Peelers.